Grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. All moved in and mostly unpacked in my new house. If you guys keep up with me on social media or listen to Inciting a Brouhaha, you will know that I have had a crazy 6 weeks of last-minute closing on our house at the very end of August after kind of being in boxes because we thought we were supposed to close on the house in July and closed on the very last day of August. So all of my equipment and life basically was in boxes since July. So that's kind of where I've been and why the riot has not been incited quite as much as I had anticipated on doing this summer. But we are back on track. We've got an Yabhaha for ya. We've got a riot this week. And in a couple of weeks, we've got our Samhain episode. But today is episode 111, Inciting a Leading Riot. Today, I'm going to be playing the audio for you from a couple of interviews that I did during this year's Chicago Pagan Pride. And you know, I always ask every year one big question, and this year was regarding leadership. What do we look for the next generation of pagan leaders? Who do community members currently look to, and what kind of leader are they looking for in the future? Or are people in the pagan community looking for pagan leaders? We're going to get to those quickie interviews at the end of the show in the spirituality segment. But I did want to discuss one other big topic this week, and that was the fact that this past week was National Coming Out Day. For members of the LGBTQ community who might be in the closet that are looking for the opportunity to come out. It's a day to encourage folks that are on the edge or precipice or considering coming out and living as their authentic selves publicly, or at least more publicly than they currently are, to encourage folks to do so, to be visible if you so choose to do that. That day, as years go by, brings up a lot of feelings for me. And in light of some recent research and polling and stuff that I'll go over later, I wanted to really talk about sort of the state of the LGBTQ community here in 2017 and kind of my impressions of what it means to come out these days. But before we can get to any of that, we have to get straight to those news headlines.
Inciting a newsworthy riot.
Just a few quick updates for you. Since we last spoke, there have been multiple natural and one very large man-made disaster. So if you are in the areas of Houston or that area of Texas, Florida, and especially Puerto Rico, just know that folks here in the riot community are with you. We support you. We love you. Our heart goes out to you. I have very, very dear, close personal friends, friends without whom I would not be with my husband and we would not be married, because these folks let us stay in their home and, you know, kind of have a safe space to be and to date and to exist freely, without judgment, and being embraced and loved, that lost their homes, that lost their home in the recent hurricane that hit Houston. But something like 85, 87% of Puerto Rico is still without power. We are not doing a great job of taking care of those people. So there are a lot of really amazing charities that are doing good work in those areas. Also, if you happen to be in California and you are a victim of the wildfires, or think you might become a victim of those wildfires, or know somebody who is a victim of the wildfires going on in California right now, I have been sharing information that Lasara Firefox Allen, a previous guest and friend of the show, has been sharing regarding how you can get housing, not free, I don't think, but how you can get housing if you need housing, without applications, without limits, without, needing to know how many numbers of pets. There's apartments for you in all sorts of areas of California, and other people that are able to help. So if you're without a home or need a place to stay, at least temporarily, look for that on Facebook and other areas of social media where we've been sharing it. So just know that my heart goes out to you. One other tragedy that I don't think I could do a news segment about this soon after the event and not talk about it. Earlier this month in Las Vegas, a man named Stephen Paddock shot and killed, at this point, we know of 59 people, and injured well over 500 others while on an upper floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, shooting into a Jason Aldean concert. I don't really know what else I can say other than to inform you that it happened, though you probably already know that it did. Police, as of the most recent report that I've seen, found 19 firearms along with explosives and thousands of bullets in the gunman's home in Mesquite, Nevada. Another 23 guns were found in his hotel room. If I bought 23 boxes of Sudafed at Target, I would get on a list. From recent reports, he bought most of these guns in the last year. If we didn't do anything about gun control after Sandy Hook, we aren't going to do anything about gun control now. However, I bring this story up because I encourage you, if you listen to this show, it probably means you care about current events. It probably means you care about what's happening to this country. And it probably means you care about the state of the world. And I encourage you, if you live in the United States, or you know people who do live in the United States, find out who your congressperson is and send them an email. Send them a text. They do that now. And let them know that you don't think that it should be okay to have 32 guns. Some of them were modified to become automatic weapons. And all of a sudden, Republicans now are like, oh, we didn't know. We had no idea that you could do that little bump stop thing and make a gun into an automatic. We had no idea, even though like everybody has been talking about the fact that you can modify weapons to make them automatic weapons so that having an automatic assault weapons ban is ludicrous, because for a few bucks and some time on the internet, you too can have the assault weapon of your NRA jerk-off dreams. Again, there's not a lot to say other than my heart goes out to anybody affected in Las Vegas. And we absolutely need to be having a conversation about gun control. Because the thing is, this is going to happen again. This shooting in Las Vegas is the largest mass shooting in modern American history. Know what the second largest was? The one that happened last year in Orlando. Want to know what happened? The third one? The one that happened the year before. It's only getting bigger and it's only getting worse, and people only have easier access to guns that can kill hundreds and hundreds of people, or at least kill dozens and injure literally hundreds and hundreds of people in seconds. So that's swell. Something else that's swell, a couple of stories here regarding some censorship. Delicious. Donald Trump, our Cheeto-in-chief, threatened this past week to use the federal government's power to license television airwaves to target NBC in response to a report by the network's news division that he contemplated a dramatic increase in the nation's nuclear arsenal. In a story aired and posted this past weekend, NBC reported that Mr. Trump, I like that the article doesn't call him president, said during a meeting in July that he wanted what amounted to a nearly tenfold increase in the nation's nuclear weapons stockpile, stunning some members of his national security team. It was after this meeting that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, you know, the Exxon guy, said Mr. Trump was a moron. Trump objected to the report in a series of Twitter messages over the course of the day and threatened to use the authority of the federal government to retaliate. So he didn't like the news story, and his tweet said, quote, from October 11th at 8:55 a.m., quote, with all of the fake news coming out of NBC and the networks, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their license? Bad for country. I bring this up because the President of the United States has just sanctioned censorship if he doesn't like the media. I'll let you go to Google and figure out what other kinds of regimes have censored news media whenever they got unfavorable press. But suffice to say, this isn't good. The President, Lord Dampnut, tends to go on a lot of attacks regarding fake news, air quotes, fake news. It's been one of his primary grievances during his very short, so far, presidency. And here's the thing about licenses and threatening licenses. Although the networks themselves do not hold federal licenses, their individual television stations do. So his threat to target NBC does actually draw concern. Tom Wheeler, used to be the Federal Communications Commission chairman, said, quote, broadcast licenses are a public trust. They're not a political toy, which is what he's trying to do here. He goes on to say, this sounds to me like another dog whistle for folks to file against the license renewals. Clearly, it would be a bridge too far for the Trump FCC to move on their own initiative. But if some conservative groups were to take this as their marching orders, it would be an interesting situation to see what the Trump FCC did. A lot of folks are coming out and talking about the fact that not only did the Secretary of State allegedly call the president a moron, to which the president responded that he can compare IQ tests with Rex Tillerson? Like, come on. But, you know, a lot of folks are also coming out as very concerned with the clear violation, clear potential violation of the First Amendment. And also to kind of say, why is this becoming normal? Why are we writing off these kinds of threats? Because the thing is, Trump so far has been a president who at least attempts to do what he says he will. I mean, you know, he said he was going to end DACA and he signed documents to have DACA end in March. So, I mean, you know, he's actively trying to build a wall or get funding for a wall and makes that some kind of priority. I mean, it's just, it's bonkers for us at this point not to take him at his word. So if he gets angry enough at another news network, I'm not going to be surprised if all of a sudden some big network news attorneys are trying to get before the Supreme Court ASAP. On a much more local level, a Biloxi school district got complaints about the wording in the book To Kill a Mockingbird and therefore pulled it from the curriculum. It was an administrative and department decision, a member of the school board said, and not something that the school board voted on. It happened this past week. Kenny Holloway, vice president of the Biloxi School Board, said, quote, there were complaints about it. There is some language in the book that makes people uncomfortable, and we can teach the same lesson with other books. This was a book that was taught in an eighth grade English language arts class. You know, funny, I've always heard as an adult that this book was taught mostly in middle schools, seventh, eighth grade level. I wasn't allowed to read this book in my teeny tiny small town, I believe, until I was sophomore year of high school, maybe junior year of high school, because boy howdy, do some small towns not love themselves to Kill a Mockingbird? Kenny Holloway, the vice president, went on to say, quote, it's still in our library, but they're going to use another book in the eighth grade course. When asked if the book had been pulled from the course, Superintendent Arthur McMillan, great name, issued a statement 5 hours later that said, quote, there are many resources and materials that are available to teach state academic standards to our students. These resources may change periodically. We always strive to do what is best for our students and staff to continue to perform at the highest level. Local paper, The Sun Herald, received an email from a concerned reader who said the decision was made, quote, mid-lesson plan. The students will not be allowed to finish the reading of To Kill a Mockingbird due to the use of the N-word. The reader went on to say, I think it is one of the most disturbing examples of censorship I have ever heard, in that the themes in the story humanize all people regardless of their social status, education level, intellect, and, of course, race. It would be difficult to find a time when it was more relevant than in days like these. The current themes for second-term language arts classes in Biloxi this year are the Golden Rule and taking a stand. With To Kill a Mockingbird specifically, the teens were slated to learn that compassion and empathy are not dependent upon race or education, according to the school's website. I guess somebody decided that that wasn't a good lesson for kids? No word yet on whether the public outrage regarding this very obvious, actual, real definition of censorship has changed the minds of the Biloxi School District. In some good news, recently, Mojo of the Wiggly and Way podcast, shout out other pagan podcasts, sent up an urgent tweet that said, urgent special announcement, click here. And well, like all good folks who are very interested in very urgent special announcements regarding my favorite Wigglians, I clicked there. And I heard a little 30-second clip of the fact that Mojo and Sparrow got hitched. So big ol' ups and shout out and all the riotous congratulations in the whole wide world to Mojo and Sparrow of the Wigglian Way. You guys literally inspired me to do this podcast. If it hadn't been for an episode that you guys did on the Burning Times, like, what has it been now, like 8 years ago? I would not be doing this show because I was talking back to you guys so much on my speakers in my car to and from work and all around. That I just thought, you know what, I need to do this. I need to put my voice on a microphone and figure out how a pagan podcast works and do one. So without you guys, I wouldn't be here. You guys are an inspiration. So thank you so much for all of the years of your work and your labor. And I'm so glad to hear that it has resulted in a very happy matrimony. Congratulations, guys. And now it's time to get a little bit smarter with the word of the day. Inciting a verbal riot. Today's word is palliate. It is a verb meaning to reduce the violence of, as in a disease, or to ease the symptoms without curing the underlying disease, to cover by excuses and apologies, or to moderate the intensity of. Some example sentences. He had an ability to describe and champion technological innovation and global integration in a rhetoric that palliated fears of change, said Matthew Continetti in commentary on November 16, 2016. Also, another example sentence, quote, I have held onto generations of them, not just for the headaches I inherited, but for belly aches, cramps, the cold, a cold, the side effects of anti-malarial pills, tennis elbow. I found that a hot water bottle excels at palliating less specific aches, ones that don't answer to where does it hurt, said Chantel Tatali in the New York Times Magazine on January 19th of this year. Did you know? Long ago, the ancient Romans had a name for the cloak-like garb that was worn by the Greeks, distinguishing it from their own toga. The name was pallium. In the 15th century, English speakers modified the late Latin word palliatus, which derives from pallium, to form palliate. Our term, used initially as both an adjective and a verb, never had the literal Latin sense referring to the cloak you wear, but it took on the figurative cloak of protection. Specifically, the verb palliate meant, as it still can mean, to lessen the intensity of a disease. The related adjective palliative describes medical care that focuses on relieving pain or discomfort rather than administering a cure.
Inciting a social riot.
This past Wednesday, October 11th, was National Coming Out Day. This is an annual LGBTQ Awareness Day, which is usually observed on October 11th and October 12th in some parts of the world. It was founded here in the United States in 1988 by Robert Eichberg and Jean O'Leary. Eichberg, who died in 1995 of complications from AIDS, was a psychologist from New Mexico and founder of the personal growth workshop, The Experience. O'Leary was an openly lesbian political leader and longtime activist from New York, and was at the time the head of the National Gay Rights Advocates in Los Angeles. LGBT activists, including Eichberg and O'Leary, did not want to respond defensively to anti-LGBT action because they believed it would be predictable. This caused them to found National Coming Out Day in order to maintain positivity and celebrate coming out. The date of October 11th was chosen because it is the anniversary of the 1987 National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights. Eichberg said in 1993, before his death, "Most people think they don't know anyone gay or lesbian, and in fact, everybody does. It is imperative that we come out and let people know who we are and disabuse them of their fears and stereotypes." Initially administered from the West Hollywood offices of the National Gay Rights Advocates, the first National Coming Out Day received participation from 18 states, garnering national media coverage. In its second year, its headquarters moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and participation grew to 21 states. After a media push in 1990, it was observed in all 50 states and 7 other countries. Participation continues to grow, and in 1990, they merged their efforts with the Human Rights Campaign, who's pretty much led the way till today. National Coming Out Day is something that, when I grew up, in my very small town that you guys are probably sick of hearing after 111 episodes about, but when I was growing up in a small town, 585 people, 9 Baptist churches, there were a lot of things about LGBTQ culture that seemed far off, seemed like it was only real on TV. And for anybody that didn't grow up in an urban area, I think you might understand what I'm talking about here. This was one of those experiences that happened on TV shows, it happened on the news, it happened elsewhere. These things happened elsewhere. Because where I came from, you didn't come out. Nobody came out. There was nobody out where I was from. I didn't know a gay person, an out gay person. Now, turns out there were at least 3 gay people in my grade that I grew up with. And there were some very obviously, you know, LGBTQ people in my high school. And since, you know, leaving, many of them have come out. But growing up where we grew up, it was not safe to come out. You know, when my parents caught me looking at men on the internet, which I didn't really get dial-up internet until I was like a senior in high school. But when they went through the web history, because I didn't know that was a thing you're supposed to delete, I was put in conversion therapy. You know, there was a guy that I went to, I think it was on Wednesday afternoons, and he would take me to Sonic and get me a milkshake and try to talk to me, and they would pray over me and lay hands on me. I mean, it was a whole weird, weird, weird experience, and it was nowhere near the kind of, you know, conversion therapy that other people went through. But still, the idea of coming out, it was something that didn't happen. Not for real. Not in real world America. It happened in cities. It happened in big cities. But it didn't happen where I grew up. I have been with my husband now going on 12 years. We celebrated 11 years this past May. I met him in 2006. And I graduated high school in 2004. And the difference in the world since I have been with my husband is astonishing to me. I mean, it's astonishing to me. I grew up with the idea of being gay was the butt of a joke. It was a plot device in ridiculous B-rated comedies. It was the hairstylist on Legally Blonde. It was, I mean, you know, we weren't real people. Nobody, you weren't a real person. And coming out was dangerous. Coming out still is dangerous. And I will be talking about that here in just a second. But now, like, 12-year-olds get coming out parties from their parents in all parts of the country. When I was growing up, there was the gay prom in Dallas, and it was talked about and laughed about at my school. And I distinctly remember this because I distinctly remember thinking, I want to go. And there was this boy in the high school that I really liked. I mean, he's totally straight. But I wanted to go, and I wanted him to be my date, and I wanted to go. But it was in Dallas, and it was like the only place in the state where a gay person, an LGBTQ person, could go to prom with the date of their choice, because you didn't go to prom with a same-sex prom date anywhere in Texas. And the fact that you can now still baffles me. But I remember thinking, I wish I could go there. And I remember, I mean, I had friends that like dragged me to prom because I didn't want to go. I didn't want to be there. I couldn't go with anybody that I wanted to go with. And it was just a bunch of the people that made me miserable, enjoying the fact that they were young and having fun and, you know, getting to get hot and sweaty with the person, their prom date on the dance floor, and then go to a hotel and do what you do on prom night. I have seen a vast change in the world. And I think that it's people like me that remember having a horrible time coming out, that remember the angry conversations with their parents and not talking to family for months, years after you came out. It's people like me that had fear about coming out and got bashed and still carry literal and figurative scars from the process of coming out and from wrestling with those demons and having to keep it all pushed down and told that you're wrong and that you're evil and that you're going to hell. And I think it's people like me, exactly like me, all over the country that are my age, maybe a little younger, maybe a little older, that are so willing to buy into the idea that when gay marriage became the law of the land in 2015, that really did fix everything. And we've talked before on this podcast about how it didn't, about how it absolutely did not, about how there are all sorts of measurable ways that we can show that being an LGBTQ person in the United States is still dangerous, and it's still an act of defiance, and there is still a lot of rights that are both tenuous and still waiting to be achieved. Both tenuously held on to and haven't been obtained yet. A lot of them. I keep a copy of my marriage license in my work bag because, God forbid, something happened to me or my husband and we end up in some kind of emergency service situation. And even though our marriage is legal and valid, I don't know if we're going to go to a state where some defiant doctor or nurse or whoever doesn't want to. The world that we live in right now trumps America. is a dangerous, dangerous place for LGBTQ people. But the thing is, I actually want to kick myself for the fact that I said Trump's America, because it's actually been going on. It's been a problem for years. There was a recent report that came out that says that in the last 5 years, the proportion of lesbian, bisexual, and gay people in the UK, not the US, the UK, who say they have been the victim of a hate crime has nearly doubled, according to a survey by Stonewall, the LGBT rights group. In 2012, 9% said they had had experienced a homophobic or biphobic crime. Today's figures, based on a survey of 5,000 people using the same sampling methods as 2012, put the number at 16%. But it is transgender people who are being targeted the most, the report found. In the last 12 months, 41% of trans people, or 2 in 5, have been subjected to a hate crime because of their gender identity. So large is the proportion that when the figures for trans people are added to those of lesbian, gay, and bisexual people, 21% of LGBT people overall, 1 in 5, have experienced a hate crime in the last year. When these figures are compared to the number of sexual orientation or gender identity hate crimes reported to the police during a similar period, it is clear that a large proportion of LGBT people do not call the police when an incident occurs. In 2014 to 2015, there were just over 7,000 reports, up from 6,400 the year before. But if LGBT people were, for example, to only account for 5% of the population, that would suggest only 1 in over 450 LGBT people had experienced a hate crime, in marked contrast to the number who told Stonewall about incidents. LGBT people who are Black, Asian, or from other ethnic minorities are also disproportionately affected by hate crimes because of their gender or sexuality, with 34%, 1 in 3, reporting a hate crime to the Stonewall survey, as opposed to 1 in 5 white LGBT people. The area with the highest proportion of LGBT people suffering hate crimes was the northeast of England, with the northwest, the southwest, and Yorkshire seeing the least. In terms of how the hate crimes manifested, 26% of incidents involved unwanted sexual activity, and 13% featured physical violence. Someone who identifies themselves as Freya, says, quote, "I was assaulted by a man whilst I was holding hands with my lesbian partner. He grabbed me from behind and thrust himself into me, then verbally attacked me." Ava, 56, says, "Someone described their intention to slit my throat and kill me. They went on to say no court would convict them for killing the queer bait." A trans man named James said, quote, "I have been stalked for over 2 years now from an unknown person. During this time, I have received anonymous threatening letters. I've had 2 letters containing razor blades, one which contained a toxic substance which burnt my hands, face, and eye. I have been beaten up 3 times. If you think that this is just a UK problem, please think again. More LGBT people have been killed in what advocacy groups categorize as hate violence-related homicides so far in 2017 than in all of 2016. This report came out in August 11th of this year. And this is here in the United States. As of August of 2017, there have been 33 hate violence-related homicides of LGBT people, according to the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs count. In 2016, there were 28. That number excludes the 49 people killed in the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. The numbers translate to roughly 1 hate violence-related death every 13 days in 2016. So far, as of August 2017, the pace of those deaths is at about 1 every 6 days. 15 of those who were killed so far this year were transgender women of color, and at least 12 were cisgender gay men. These reports came from all over the U.S., from Texas to New York to Wisconsin. Now, the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs said that there's no one clear explanation for the increase, but that it could be driven by a combination of increased media reporting, more accurate identification of victims by law enforcement, and a possible increase in violence. Increased media attention to LGBT rights, and particularly transgender rights, in recent months could also be part of the explanation. Beverly Tillery, executive director at the New York City Anti-Violence Project, said, quote, "I think whether it's an increase in reporting, an increase in violence, or some combination thereof, it should be a wake-up call for us across our communities that hate violence is not going away. It's certainly not decreasing, and it's symptomatic of larger and deeper problems in our society that we still haven't addressed. Now, this organization's tally is not definitive by any means, but it's the most comprehensive yearly indicator in the absence of reliable nationwide government data of how many homicides of LGBT people are being reported around the country. This organization gathers data from media reports, friends and family members of victims, and member organizations across the country. They categorize homicides as, quote, hate violence if it appears that the victim was targeted because of their gender identity or sexual orientation. That doesn't necessarily mean the cases were classified as hate crimes by law enforcement, which has a different set of legal standards. Dallas Drake, senior researcher at the Center for Homicide Research, says that the rate of homicides of trans women and gay men are worth studying, but that there's no way of knowing if these figures represent an actual increase in violence. Either way, he said, the NCAVP is likely undercounting the real number. He says, quote, there are a lot more homicides of LGBT people than what they report. They don't report generally from communities that are smaller or where cases are not easily identifiable as LGBT homicides. Vanessa Ponful, an assistant professor of sociology and criminal justice at Old Dominion University in Virginia, said that an increase in violence is in line with a real backlash against progress made on LGBT rights in recent years. That backlash, she says, has been encouraged in part by the Trump administration walking back Obama-era guidances and policies that were LGBT inclusive, such as supporting trans students' rights and signaling a ban on allowing trans people to serve in the military. As a result, transgender people across the country are relying on courts to decide if they're allowed to access bathrooms in line with their gender identities, a decision the Supreme Court decided not to weigh in on when it set a landmark trans rights case that when it sent a trans rights case back to a lower court earlier this year. At the state level, transgender bathroom bills aren't gaining much traction since the defeat of North Carolina's HB2, but some state legislatures are now considering bills that would prevent cities and local councils from having non-discrimination ordinances. Two of the trans women of color killed this year were in New Orleans. China Gibson, 31, was shot and killed outside a shopping mall, and Clara McElveen, 25, was stabbed to death in the city's 7th Ward. The incidents were unrelated. Gibson, who grew up in New Orleans but lived in Sacramento, was in the city to celebrate Mardi Gras. She was gunned down on a Saturday in February outside the Bella Plaza shopping center where she'd gone to pick up a dress for a party that night. There are a lot of cases like this. Cisgender, gay men, trans women of color, trans men, lesbians, all killed because of who they are. And this is just the murders, folks. This is just the deaths, one every 6 days here in the United States. That's just the deaths. We're not talking about hate crimes of other kinds. We're not talking about assault. We're not talking about the everyday criminalities, getting fired from a job for being LGBTQ. Not getting that promotion for being LGBTQ. Not getting a house because you're LGBTQ. This past Friday in Mississippi, their anti-LGBT bill HB 1523 took effect after the Fifth Circuit denied a rehearing challenging the law. HB 1523 allows officials and healthcare providers in the state to discriminate freely against LGBTQ individuals due to their own moral or religious objections, such as turning away same-sex couples who seek marriage licenses or declining hormone therapy to transgender patients. The bill, called the Protecting Freedom of Conscience from Government Discrimination Act, passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Phil Bryant in 2016, has been on hold from a ruling by federal district judge Carlton Reeves that it unconstitutionally privileges people who hold three particular religious beliefs in violation of the First Amendment. A three-judge panel of the appellate court had ruled the plaintiffs, Campaign for Southern Equality, lacked standing to bring the challenge. The full court declined to rehear the case. HB 1523 will allow anyone from doctors to store owners to deny service for LGBT people based on individual religious beliefs. Critics of the law call it the nation's most sweeping anti-LGBT law, while supporters say it protects their faith-based convictions. Those in opposition said they're contemplating their next legal step in the coming days. The legislation passed in the Mississippi General Assembly last year and was signed by Governor Phil Bryant, but faced legal challenges since, but legal challenges since have yet to take effect. That's expected to change this week after a three-judge panel ruled the plaintiffs who sued in opposition to HB 1523 didn't have the standing challenging the law. I'm glad that organizations like National Coming Out Day and the Human Rights Campaign exist. And I'm glad that we are trying to make safe spaces for people to come out. And I am so glad that some 12-year-old somewhere can come out and have a party from their parents. I'm really glad that we're at a place where people can post their wedding photos on Instagram and not have a sea of hate-filled comments. Maybe just a few drops. I'm happy about that. I really am. But I also want to urge us, folks my age, folks older than me, that distinctly remember what it was like just the better part of a decade ago to come out. How dangerous it was. What it's really like to be LGBTQ out in the world. When you're not amongst friends, when you're somewhere new, when you're traveling. I want us to remember so that we don't get complacent. I want us to remember so that that 12-year-old can live to see 22, so they can live to see 52, so they can marry the partner of their choice and not worry that those rights are going to be taken away, because boy, howdy. Mississippi is not the only state that wants to take our rights away. The right to go to a store, the right to go to a restaurant and eat dinner, that right, they want to take that right away from you. Just to be able to walk freely down the street so angers some people that they want to take that right away from us. I'm glad that National Coming Out Day exists. But I need us to recognize that we have become complacent as hell. We got marriage equality and stopped. We stopped. Folks, we need to fight. We need to riot. We need to be good allies. We need to remember that in the hierarchy of folks inside of the LGBT community, LGBTQ community, that white gay men have a whole heck of a lot of visibility and power, and we need to make sure that we use that voice to hold up everybody else. I'm so sick and tired of seeing another trans woman of color, another trans woman of color, another trans woman of color was gunned down, stabbed to death, had acid poured on her face, raped. I'm so sick of these ever-increasing reports, the ever-increasing homicides, the ever-increasing victimization of our community. Wake up and stay woke.
Inciting a spiritual riot.
I am here with Kate and Morn of Chicago Pagan Establishment Witchy Wearables, which was the very first pagan shop that I ever found when I first moved to Chicago, and it is still my very favorite. I haven't been since I moved, but plan on coming back soon. Kate and Morn, how was Pagan Pride this year?
Very good. Seen a lot of old friends that we haven't seen since last year. But I've seen a lot of customers, too, and it's just always a good, fun atmosphere, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Did you guys feel like the turnout was bigger this year? How was it?
Absolutely, definitely bigger than last year.
Yeah.
But I think the election was holding people away.
Really?
Yeah. But this year, we also have gorgeous weather, and, you know, it's a perfect day to do this.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. So tell folks a little bit about Witchy Wearables.
Okay.
How long have you guys been around?
Just like a month shy of 14 years.
Oh my gosh.
And we used to be in Midlothian, mm-hmm. and then we did a short move a couple of years ago into Oak Forest, not far.
Beautiful space.
Yeah, it is, but I do miss the old shop. The old shop was kind of like a witch's cottage, you know? Yeah. But the new shop is beautiful. It's open. It's airy. We're right on Cicero, 15530 Cicero Avenue. And we have a new manager, Rose Dragon. She's excellent.
Oh, wonderful.
We couldn't do it without her. So.
And, you know, I remember whenever we did Pagan Podkin Supermood here a few years ago, Witchy Wearables was the place that we chose to kind of kick it off.
Yes, it was. Wonderful.
Yeah, and what everybody came away talking about Witchy Wearables is out of all of the different witchy shops in Chicago, it's the place where you can go to get amazing handcrafted things that you will not get anywhere else. I mean, everything from the Tragedy Ann dolls to all of the handmade herbal bottles and trinkets and all sorts of things. Where do you guys find these artisans?
They actually find us. Or like it here, we see something that catches our eye, we talk to the person and work things out. But we're very proud of our our local artisans.
And, oh yeah, and you guys do such a great job of celebrating local artists. We do.
I mean, I am one.
Soaps and creams and spell kits and jewelry and candles. Yeah.
And you guys also have great classes too.
Yes, we do have good classes. I think so. We also teach like 6 different kinds of Reiki. Mm-hmm. Sakum, Celtic, Dragon, Tiger, and Elemental. And
you lead Spiral Scouts.
I don't anymore. I had to quit because of my pain issues. But Spiral Scouts is still going strong here in the South Suburb, which I'm so proud of because I was the founder of that circle. And they're over on the other side of the mansion here at Pagan Pride.
I
handling
love
the children's
seeing them
area.
Here. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what kinds of things should people be looking forward to? I know that Witchy Wearables is always really busy during October. What kinds of things are coming up if people are in Chicago and want a little taste of Samhain before the day hits?
I'm trying to think of what classes that we're doing.
Well, what we're doing, for one thing, we have been all summer we've been doing this magical market, which mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be a metaphysical garage sale. I was out of the loop on that. But what it turned into was a really nice craft show, and unbeknownst to me. But we're having one the last weekend of September, and we're kind of mixing it in with Hocus Pocus, which is our, you've done before.
I've done many years.
And we're mixing them in this year.
Oh, nice, nice.
So, and then we have the Hocus Pocus, and there will be probably, we've been doing these ritual, all day rituals where you can stop in, so we'll probably be doing a Samhain ritual on Samhain.
Yeah.
So I'm asking everybody, last year, every year on the show, whenever I do, whenever I cover Pagan Pride, I always try to, come up with kind of this year's theme. And I think with a lot of the news surrounding, some of our bigger name pagan leaders, air quotes here, getting in some legal troubles this year. Kenny Klein comes to mind, a few other folks. And I want to know, what do you guys think the state of pagan leadership is in the country, in the world? Do you think people are still looking to those, authors or big shop owners or things? Or do you, what do you think the state of pagan leadership is? Is it local still? Is it big names? What do you think?
To me, in Chicago here, it seems like it's more local. I mean, and I know she's in Wisconsin, but I've lost her name.
Selena Fox,
bless her heart.
She right is over there.
Yeah, she's
away
right
from
over on the
her.
Other side. Yeah, she always, has, because she is the kind of leadership that also has a heart. Mm-hmm. She's not just bossy about this, that, and the other thing. You know what I mean? She really believes in the community. Mm-hmm. And so she treats people that way. So I think that she's wonderful. And but I think we tried to do a group, here in Chicago called the Chicago Cauldron, mm-hmm. Pagan Cauldron. And it just fell apart after several months because,
Pagan groups are hard.
It's like shirting cats sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes you think that might be easier.
Yeah.
A lot of personalities.
Yeah.
You asked about paganism in general. This may be controversial, but I think a lot of pagans are afraid right now mm-hmm. with our wonderful leader. I am a bit afraid mm-hmm. of, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, you're a woman and you're married to a woman, yes, and you run a small business that caters to a very minority market. I can understand why you might be a little hesitant,
yes,
of current leadership.
I totally am, but I'm a pagan witch, and I will be till I die, and that's just who I am.
Yeah.
You know, but like Morton mentioned, Selena, she's wonderful. I used to work for Pat Monahan before she passed, and she was another really wonderful, you know, big name pagan, as we call them.
Yeah, those B&Ps.
We need to keep together.
Absolutely.
We do. I mean, people look and you say, pagan. What's pagan?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, when we went to Catholic school, it used to be, you know,
anything help, that wasn't Christian.
Yeah, yeah. And help, you know, feed like the pagan babies.
I'll just joke about
Yeah. Yeah. But
well, thank you guys so much for taking a few minutes to talk to me. So folks can find Witchy Wearables online.
Mm-hmm. WitchyWearablesOnline.com.
WitchyWearablesOnline.com or on Facebook, Witchy Wearables.
Yeah.
And you guys are over in Cicero?
On Cicero. Yeah, 15530 Cicero Avenue.
You guys come down, stop by, take a class from Kate and Morn or one of their other many wonderful instructors, get a tarot reading, come by for one of their markets. They are doing good things here at Witchy Wearables.
Thank you.
Folks, I'm here with Tara and Heidi of the Chicago chapter of Spiral Scouts. Ladies, thank you so much for being here today.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
So tell me a little bit about your chapter of Spiral Scouts.
We are the Rainbow Children Prairie Circle. We were actually originated in 2007 from the company Witchy Wearables.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently in Oak Forest. It's passed over to a few leaders, and it's now mine and Tara's turn. We consist of children from ages 3 to 18, and we have 4 different sections of children, so they all earn different types of badges. We meet once a month, because we're all from all over the area, Chicagoland area, like from way up north to way down south. But it's a good opportunity for families that are more earth-centered to be able to earn badges related to what we're into.
Well, you know, and what's incredible is you guys have been around so long. I mean, you said you started in 2007, right?
Yes.
I mean, this is your 10th anniversary of this chapter existing.
Wow, I didn't even think about that.
And that's pretty incredible. I mean, any pagan group anywhere would love to have such a tenure. So what's the secret to keeping this group together and alive?
Not giving up. I did find out that we are the second oldest group in the Spiral Scouts organization.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Congratulations, ladies. How many kids do you guys have?
I think currently we are at 8. A lot of our children are raindrops or fireflies, so it's between the ages of 3 and 9.
And a bunch age out and things of that sort.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So what kinds of things do you guys do? What kind of badges could my kid expect to earn if he or she were a raindrop?
Do art badges, we do gardening badges, we'll garden something, and then we'll take what we've gardened, then we'll take it in the kitchen, and they'll earn a cooking badge.
That's
from
amazing.
That. So, we had recently a yoga badge that the children earned. So
and
a Reiki badge.
Energy and meditation. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of field trips, so we visited the Little Red Schoolhouse Nature Center. And we do have sponsors, too, so we visited their locations as well. 3 of them are Alchemy Art Chicago, which is here right now, and World Tree Healing. They've offered spaces for us to come and do our meetings at. And then our third sponsor is down in Manteno. It's Hi-Ho Gems and Crystals. So it was really cool to learn our geology badge down there.
That is so incredible. That is so incredible. So one of the questions that I'm asking everybody today is, you know, given a lot of shakeups in political leadership, given a lot of shakeups in pagan leadership. You know, we've had some big name pagans that have gone through some weird legal stuff this year, and you know, Kenny Klein comes to mind, and a lot of other folks. You know, how do you guys, as leaders of sort of that next generation of little witchlets, how do you guys lead them, and how do you teach them about what good leadership looks like?
Well, I'm also a public school teacher, and a huge thing we are pushing for right now, especially after the recent elections, I should say, is the hashtag Choose Kind, inspired by the book Wonder that's actually coming out as a movie. It's about how no matter how different you are, to choose kindness over being right or wrong. Being kind to one another, being open-minded. So that's more of what I feel that we should be teaching the kids, especially at the young age. It instills in them early on, so they become nicer people, I guess, more open-minded when they're older.
And what kind of pagan leaders do you all look to for leadership?
Believe it or not, Selena Fox is here.
Everybody's saying Selena Fox. She's
the one
pretty
that
incredible.
Actually helped inspire our own group before we became Spiral Scouts. So I'm totally inspired by everything she's done.
Wonderful. Ladies, thank you so much for taking a couple of minutes out of your day. I really appreciate it. And thank you guys for so much for everything that you do. You know, do you guys see a big future for Spiral Scouts? This going strong? You guys going to be celebrating another 10 years?
Hopefully.
Yes, I hope so too.
Thank you, ladies, so much.
Thank you.
Rioters, that's just going to about do it for this episode 111, Inciting a Leading Riot. I appreciate you guys sticking around. Do not worry, Samhain is just a couple of weeks around the corner. As always, I am opening up the Riot to submissions. If you have a creepy, cool, supernatural story of your very own, if you have a fairy tale, a bit of folklore, a favorite spell, a recipe, a potion, a brew, a fond memory, whatever it is that you would like to share and have on the Samhain special, email it to me. And you know what? Just like in years past, if you can whip out your phone and get into a nice quiet space and record yourself reading your story or telling your ghost story or telling your supernatural experience or whatever it is, if you can submit an audio file, that would be great, because I love the episodes that are everybody, you know, where it sounds like everybody's just sitting around a campfire, sharing stories, sharing folklore, sharing spells, sharing songs. If you are a band, if you're a pagan musician and you would like to contribute some music, send that in. My email for the show is firelight, F-I-R-E-L-Y-T-E, at incitingariot.com. Just, you know, in your headline, say that this is for the Samhain special. That way I know to look at your email quickly so that I can get that show together here in the next 2 weeks. I need to say some thank yous. Thank you. This show and Inciting a Brouhaha would not be coming out with the regularity that they have been were it not for the very generous donations of you all. There are so many of you that have signed on to patreon.com/incitingprojects, which is a place where you can support this show and Inciting a Brouhaha, my joint show with Velma Nightshade, and you guys are really, really turning it out. You not only have covered all of the costs of producing the show, but you have helped to upgrade software. You have helped to upgrade some hardware after I moved and some things didn't work anymore, had to buy new cables. So because of you guys, this show can come out regularly. I don't have to worry about making sure that the funds are there to pay for everything, pay for enough bandwidth for folks all over the world to listen to the various inciting shows. So big verbal shout out to our newest donor and High Mugwump, the first person to go on to the High Mugwump level, Danny Kinneberg. Thank you so much, Danny. And at the High Mugwump level, I think that means you're coming on Inciting a Brouhaha with me and Velma. So we're just going to have ourselves a little three-way on Yabhaha. Said that wrong. Whatever. I meant it. Also, big verbal shout out here to Carrie Beckler and Andrea Santoro. Andrea, if you do not know, is the badass, sensey salesperson of your dreams. I was not a sensey believer. I really wasn't. And I swear to God, this isn't about to become an infomercial. But, I mean, at the $20 level or more, you get an infomercial. She didn't ask me to do this. I haven't asked her what product she once hawked. But Andrea is also called Metallica Mom. And I think you can do like sensi.com/Metallica Mom. And she, let me tell you, if you find her on Facebook, she posts all sorts of awesome, hilarious videos of her doing like unboxing of Scentsy products and smelling Scentsy waxes and warmers and stuff. Folks, they're hilarious and they make my day every single time. And like, seriously, Andrea Santoro, aka Metallica Mom, go search for her, get all of your Scentsy, waxy, smelly good stuff from her.
tell her the riot sent you and that we love her dearly. Carrie Beckler, Carrie graciously via email said, listen, I don't have anything to hawk. Carrie, you get 30 seconds per show. So I'm just going to sit here and say, thank you, Carrie. You're amazing and you're awesome and you're wonderful. There are a whole bunch of people also that signed up recently at the $10 a month or more level. And for those folks, you guys recently got a treat because the last episode of Inciting a Brouhaha was the very first video episode. And we're starting to do video episodes, full unedited video episodes of Inciting a Brouhaha for Patreon subscribers only. So the only way that you can see myself and Velma doing the show is if you're a Patreon subscriber. So thank you all so much. If you would like to keep Pagan Media alive, you can give as little as a dollar a month at patreon.com/incitingprojects. Feel free to email the show. Remember, the Samhain special is coming up as per every year. I do ask if you guys would love to contribute. I would love for you to contribute. One, it makes sure that the show can come out on time because that's less content I have to come up with. But two, I love to hear your stories, your take on Halloween, your take on Samhain. If you have another holiday that you celebrate at this time of year and there's a special tradition or story or myth about it, send that in. It doesn't have to necessarily be Samhain. I mean, you know, we've got some cool Diwali myths or something. Send that in. It's all good here in the Riot Hood. So send that in. Firelight, F-I-R-E-L-Y-T-E at incitingariot.com. Thank you guys for subscribing. Thank you for continuing to rate the show. There have been some really sweet comments as I was in the midst of my move that you guys are continuing to comment on iTunes. Commenting and liking and rating the show highly on iTunes gets other people to see the show and it keeps us up in the rankings. So please, 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 if you like the show, take 5 seconds out of your day because you're probably on your iPhone already. Just hit the 5-star. Just hit it on Apple Podcasts. Just hit it on that app or Google Play. We're on Google Play now. If you're listening to us on a Google Play, you just hit the rate button and love the show. And so other people can love the show too. You can tweet at me. I am at Inciting a Riot. And of course, you can find the show's Facebook page, facebook.com/Inciting a Riot Podcast. That's it. Thank you so much for everything. I do appreciate it. Big shout out and congratulations one last time to Mojo and Sparrow of the Wiggly and Way. But I gotta go. I gotta go make dinner. I just baked some amazing banana bread and it's not gonna eat itself. So I need to go do that. But I love you guys. Thanks for sticking around. And I'm gonna leave you. But as always, I will leave you with love and light. Firelight.